Today on the 21st Show, the campaign to be the next U.S. Senator from Illinois. Over the past few months, we've talked with 13 of the candidates running in the primaries. Today, in the first of a two-part series, we'll bring you recaps of those interviews. We begin with the Democrats, proceeding in alphabetical order with Steve Botsford, Sean Brown, Owisi Bustos, Jonathan Dean, Robin Kelly, and Brian Maxwell. Additional Democrats and the Republicans will be on tomorrow's program. I'm Brian Mackey, and that's coming up today on The 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WNIJ in Rockford-DeKalb, WVIK in the Quad Cities, and WSIU in Carbondale. But first, news. From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're now just a week away from the primary election. As a reminder, early voting is already underway across the state. Starting today, we're going to bring you a recap of our conversation with candidates for U.S. Senate. This vacancy is being created by Dick Durbin's decision not to seek another term. There are 16 people running, 10 Democrats, 6 Republicans, and over the past several months, we've invited all of them to take part in an hour-long interview on the show. We've now talked with 13 of them. On the Democratic side, in alphabetical order, Steve Botsford, Sean Brown, Owisi Bustos, Jonathan Dean, Robin Kelly, Brian Maxwell, Kevin Ryan, and Juliana Stratton. Among Republicans, we've heard from R. Kerry Caparelli, Casey Chlebek, Jeannie Evans, Pamela Denise Long, and Don Tracy. Today and tomorrow, we're going to bring you highlights of each of those interviews in the order I just mentioned. That means today we're going to hear from most of the Democrats we talked with. Tomorrow we'll hear from the rest, as well as the Republican candidates. For completion's sake, Democratic frontrunner Raja Krishnamurti's campaign has expressed interest, but canceled on us twice late last year and is not yet rescheduled. Fellow Democratic candidate Christopher Swan was unable to make our scheduled interview last month, citing a family emergency, and Republican Jimmy Lee Tillman II has not responded to any of our inquiries. As you can imagine, we're going to cover a lot of ground between today and tomorrow's programs. That said, we have so many candidates to get through that we're only going to be able to cover a few issues with each person. We are going to focus on the ones most in the news this year and that we hear most about from listeners, such as immigration enforcement and healthcare policy. These may not be the issues you find most important, in which case I would point you to the full interviews on our website. Speaking of that, we also plan to outline some of the policy differences between the candidates in a visual format online, and you can find all of that at 21stshow.org. Okay, on with the program. Because we're going in alphabetical order, our first candidate today is actually the last one we spoke to on the program, Democrat Steve Botsford from Chicago. He works for his family's real estate firm. In the world of politics, he's been a legislative assistant for a former California member of the U.S. House of Representatives, a Democrat. He also worked on the 2018 Attorney General campaign of Erica Harold, a Republican. And in 2023, he ran an unsuccessful campaign for the city council in Chicago. I spoke with him late last month. One issue I've asked many of the candidates about is immigration enforcement, especially when it comes to the actions of ICE and Border Patrol. When we talked with Botsford, he was in favor of reforming ICE.
First off, it's got to be no more masks, no more hidden badges. We need the ICE to have warrants signed by judges. We also need to make sure that ICE is only going after criminals and not just, like I said, showing up at childcare facilities or Home Depots and just picking people up and, you know, seeing whether or not they have documentation. We also need independent investigations into the use of force. Obviously, I do not trust the administration to investigate the deaths of Ms. Good and Mr. Peretti. And lastly, I think this would actually go a way to solve a lot of them is if we really hold the line and try to force Trump to fire Stephen Miller.
Stephen Miller, his top aide, the chief architect of this anti-immigrant policy. What do you think about, you know, this phrase abolish ICE was once a fringe position? There have been polls showing more people are supporting it. Where are you on that? Should we abolish ICE?
So obviously we haven't always had ICE. We've had border security before the Department of Homeland Security even existed. That was created after 9/11. So there are other ways that we could secure our border. I don't necessarily love any time we get into slogans. I don't think that we should govern on slogans and shibboleths. I think I'd rather policy, because I think so often an idea of abolishing ICE can be misconstrued as no enforcement whatsoever.
Another domestic issue that's been top of mind for Democratic candidates is how to bring health care costs down. Some have called for what they describe as Medicare for all. Botsford is against that.
So a lot of people are supportive of Medicare for all, especially I think everybody but me and Raja are not supportive of it in this race. I just don't think that we can afford it. Right now, the U.S. is in $36 trillion plus of debt. Sometime within the next 10 years, the service, just paying the interest on our debt is going to be the largest part of our non-discretionary budget. Which means everything else that we want to try to, all the other programs we're going to talk about that politicians like to support, like, is all going to be smaller than paying down the debt. That's how bad our debt's got. And interest rates, as they continue to rise, is going to make our debt more expensive. So I don't think we can take on such a massive new program right now. I think also in the United States, I think one of the cool parts about our democracy is we've got 50 states and we've got this system of federalism, and it allows states to attempt to do different things, and then we see how it works on the state level before we bring it to the national level. So Massachusetts, passed a healthcare bill that was very similar to the Affordable Care Act, and so we saw it work in Massachusetts, and we saw it didn't work. So then we tried to make it on a national level, and we upsized it. There is no state that has tried to pass a Medicare for all style bill. Not even, a small super liberal state like Vermont, where Bernie Sanders represents. They looked at trying to pass such a program, and they thought it was too cost prohibitive. So if a state like Vermont can't do it, I just don't see how that's even close to possible for a country as big as ours.
I also asked the candidates about foreign policy, including America's relationship with Israel and Palestine. In particular, we asked many of the Democratic candidates, would you say Israel's response to the Hamas attack in 2023 constitutes a genocide? Here's what Steve Botsford had to say.
I wouldn't go and define it as a genocide. I definitely think it was over the top. I definitely think they've committed war crimes at certain points. I think when it comes to this, obviously it's a touchy subject, but it's clear that they've gone way overboard, and we should not be funding this. We should not be giving offensive weapons to Israel. I think we need a two-state solution. And to get there, we're going to need a partner in the Israeli government that is open to a two-state solution. And I don't think the Netanyahu government is that. So I think we should not continue any of this funding as long as Netanyahu is the leader of Israel.
Completely cut off American funding to Israel, you think?
Yes, I mean, as long as it's Netanyahu. If we get a new government in Israel that is supportive of a two-state solution, stops the expansion in the West Bank, and is actually going to try to get something with the Palestinians, then we can go back to the relationship we had previously. Obviously, it'll still be different because this has been such a relationship-changing event. But yeah, as long as Netanyahu's there, it's got to shut off.
And finally, there's been a debate among Democrats over whether the party should focus on holding the current administration accountable for its actions or instead focus on issues like affordability. In particular, we asked Botsford, would you support another move to impeach Donald Trump?
It's not something that I want to campaign on. I don't think that is what the American people are going to give us power back to do. I don't like President Trump. I think he's most definitely has probably committed some impeachable crimes. I don't think the votes are there to actually impeach him. I'm very pragmatic. If we don't have the votes, why are we going to waste energy? We only have so much political capital. I want to spend it on making people's lives better. In principle, I think he's probably committed impeachable offenses. Do I think we're going to be able to impeach him and get him out of office? No. So am I going to focus on it? No. I'm going to focus on trying to make people's lives better, and trying to develop a reason for the not only, obviously, I hope we win back the House and the Senate in 2026, but we also got to start getting ready for hopefully to having a Democratic president in 2028, and then we can really hit the ground running. So I want to start building out the agenda and start building some coalitions with Republicans. So when we get that president in 2028, we can start enacting reforms real quick and start delivering for the American people.
Again, that was Steve Botsford, one of the Democrats running in the primary for U.S. Senate. If you're just joining us, it's the 21st show. Today and tomorrow, we're bringing you recaps, excerpts of our interviews with candidates running in the Senate primary, which is a week from today. Early voting is already happening. Out of 16 candidates, we talked with 13 of them on the show. You can find the rest at our website, 21stshow.org. Proceeding through the alphabet, next on our list is Democrat Sean Brown, also from Chicago. His background is in law, and for several years he was an assistant state's attorney in Cook County. He's been in private practice for the past few years. I talked with him in mid-February. When it comes to immigration enforcement, Brown called for a more targeted approach than the one taken by ICE and Border Patrol.
Here's the thing. We have immigration laws just like we have, you know, state and local laws. State and locally, you know, our state troopers, our local police departments enforce those state laws. We also have federal immigration law. So ICE is responsible for enforcing federal immigration law. Now, I disagree with the way that these operations are being handled, you know, in terms of essentially they're having these militarized setups on the streets armed with, you know, machine rifles. And it's just, you know, it's causing chaos and scaring everyday members of the community, you know, citizens and non-citizens alike. If you're going to have those type of operations, they need to be targeted. They need to be in a coalition with community leaders and local law enforcement so that we don't have, you know, these militarized operations on the streets of our country. That's very un-American. That's not a society that any of us would want to live in, nor would we want our children to live in that type of society.
From there, I asked Brown how he feels about the idea of abolishing ICE.
I mean, whether you abolish ICE or replace it with something else, there still has to be some entity, some agency that has to enforce our immigration laws. So, I mean, I think, you know, abolishing it is more so semantics. What really is going to happen is we have to be able to reel in how ICE is operating. That's what it really boils down to. Nobody really has a problem with ICE. I mean, it's just the manner in which these operations are being conducted.
Well, right. Okay, so when you say nobody has a problem with ICE, I would say I think some people have a problem with the people who are being recruited into it, apparently, or the way they're operating. What do you think about this move that Democrats are doing now, saying, look, I mean, we're recording this on Thursday. There's this threat of a government shutdown. Democrats are saying no masks, no, wear name tags, things like that most police officers
exactly
have to do. What do you think about the way they're approaching this?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. You know, whether it's local law enforcement or federal law enforcement, they need to have name tags. They need to be able to show their face. That gives trust to the community. Otherwise, you know, it's like these supposedly law enforcement officials are operating like thugs. And, you know, that's not conducive to a community that wants to have a safe environment that brings chaos.
ICE came up again when I asked Brown about what Democrats should do if they regain power in Washington.
I am a forward-moving thinker. You know, what's happened in the past is happened in the past. We have to move forward. As far as ICE is concerned, we need to establish laws that ensure that ICE can't just go into our state territories without our local government officials and local law enforcement cooperating with them. If there is no cooperation, then they shouldn't be on state territory.
Hmm. What about the flip side of that, though? Like, if it's a policy that a Democratic administration would want to see, and then local government says, no, we don't want that here, should they be able to refuse federal enforcement? I mean, this was the whole, you know, you can go back to the Civil Rights Act,
right,
and Eisenhower sending in the National Guard to enforce school desegregation.
Absolutely. It's a situation where you have to, it's not a partisan plan. This is a situation where individuals in the particular community are fearful of these ICE agents, as you indicated, on our streets, no name tags, wearing masks, militarized, assault rifles. It's just a scary situation. So, you know, regardless of what side of the aisle that you fall on, it comes down to a situation where we have to enforce policies that are going to be productive to ensuring a safe society.
And finally, we talked with Brown about economic policy. He's advocating for a form of universal health care.
A lot of, you know, my opponents, they want a Medicare for all situation. But that's not pragmatic. That's not something that's actually going to get passed. It's ideological. It's a, you know, an ideal situation. But we got to be able to do things that's actually going to get passed so that, you know, we can actually feel it. The people can actually feel what's going on and see it. So the program that I'm pushing is similar to a Medicare for all. But there's a private option. So essentially everybody starts off with the public option, which I call it the Universal Care Plus. It includes comprehensive hospital coverage, emergency room coverage, mental health coverage. And then if people want to opt out and take private insurance, they can. That way you maintain freedom of choice and you still have the competition in the marketplace, which is going to be beneficial for both sides. Obviously, Democrats are going to love the fact that everybody's covered. And then the Republicans are going to love the fact that it's actually saving money. Everybody still has, you know, the right to choose which one that they want. And then there's still competition in the marketplace so that businesses, whether small or large, can still thrive.
Once again, Sean Brown, another of the Democrats running in this year's U.S. Senate primary in Illinois. You can hear the full interview at our website, 21stshow.org. We'll continue our recaps after a break. This is The 21st Show. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're recapping our interviews with candidates running in the primaries for U.S. Senate in Illinois. This is to fill Dick Durbin's vacancy. He chose not to seek another term. Early voting's open now. Primary election day is next week, March 17th. We've sorted the candidates by party, and we're going through them in alphabetical order. If you missed one of the recaps or you want to hear a full interview, you can do that on our website, 21stshow.org. Next, through the alphabet, is Democrat Owisi Bustos. She was born in Benin to two Ghanaian parents. She earned her degrees in America. In the world of politics, she served for 5 years as an aide in the Quad Cities for Senator Dick Durbin. She's also worked in multiple capacities for the state of Illinois. But her most recent work before her Senate campaign was as executive director of the state's Alliance of Boys and Girls Clubs. I spoke with her in early February. Bustos' father worked as a diplomat, so early on, I asked her how she thinks about the rhetoric being used by the Trump administration to talk about immigrants.
As a child of a diplomat, programmed to function the way I function in the world, you look at the beauty and the humanity and the dignity in people, right? I am the product of so much internationally, by virtue of lived experience and by career and path, and also by virtue of what's inside of me, right? And so watching a level of disparity or disparaging other people, other cultures, other, it's disheartening on the human soul level. And it's honestly the type of lack of integrity, tact, and just what is dignified of a leader of any place, let alone a place as great as the United States, right? I think ultimately, I don't internalize anything. My greatest accomplishments and my experiences in life have led me to know that the more people know about you, the more you're open and honest about what makes your culture different and learning about other people's cultures and places, the more you realize that we're all the same, right? You know, crazy analogy or crazy thought here. If we were to be invaded by aliens tomorrow, all of human beings would literally get together and fight the aliens, right? It wouldn't matter whether you're Mexican, Ghanaian, Jewish, white, black, yellow, green, blue. It really doesn't matter. We're all human. And I think I'd like to think that that is what we all need to keep front and center, is that we all have one life to live on this earth. Everyone wants to just make the best of their existence, and they have a God-given, dignified, universal human right to that, and to not have anything interfere with that. So that's where I anchor in, and I anchor in the promise of this country and the history, and that is the blueprint for what the future will look like and should look like.
I also asked Bustos what she thinks the role of the Senate is in checking the actions of the executive branch on foreign policy, particularly in the wake of the Trump administration's capture of Venezuela's president earlier this year.
It should go back to reinforcing, you know, the presidential powers, reinforcing the fact that certain actions do require congressional authority. Clearly, that is currently the state of the law. However, this still happened. And so going back to the drawing board and figuring out what are the loopholes, what are the ways in which these types of unprecedented international violations occur, and work, you know, collaboratively in the most bipartisan and legal way possible to ensure that these types of, you know, violations of freedom of speech, violations of international law and conventions, violations of norms, violations of even our internal processes and constitutional checks and balances don't happen, right? Obviously, it's a lot easier said than done, but ultimately, there are a lot of smart experts at the table and legal experts on both sides. And it all boils down to the United States going back to the drawing board and understanding that there was a point in time in this country where it didn't really matter what party you were from, was right, and what's wrong was wrong. We can argue and defer and have differences about, you know, whether you have conservative policies economically or liberal, or whether on social issues, all those things. But we're all here to serve our state and serve our individual regions to the best of our ability. But when it comes to what the Constitution prescribes and how that should be enacted, those are non-negotiables. Those are crystal clear. And so there needs to be a going back to that thought process of an assault on, and this kind of behavior is an assault on what keeps us all safe. You know, anarchy, violating constitutional boundaries and checks and balances that our forefathers thought of and universally and collaboratively worked to get to where we are. This is a dismantling of all of that. And, you know, going back to the words that, you know, the president used for some of these other countries that you mentioned, that's pretty much what it's looking like for the United States. You know, we're going to be we are close to being and on track to being one of the countries he talks about if we don't, you know, reverse course and start operating within the fundamental values on which this country was built.
Later, we turned our attention to domestic policy. Here's how Owusi Bustos is thinking about the Border Patrol and Immigration and Customs Enforcement.
I believe that there needs to be reform. There needs to be an adherence to the rights of U.S. citizens. Currently, this militarization of that department is in complete contradiction and violation to its intended purpose and also to what is allowed and prescribed by the Constitution. And so Congress really needs to go back to the drawing board and ensure that individuals who are hired to serve and protect are actually serving and protecting, and that immigration reform and policies should be adhering to, you know, constitutional checks and balances and the right level of appropriate behaviors that are dignified of public servants, because that is what they are. They're they're public servants. And
so I can understand, and it makes sense what you're saying about Congress, you know, sort of in the future, especially looking at who is in these positions. Do you think Democrats, and whether it's through congressional investigations or perhaps a future Democratic presidential administration, should pursue accountability for what's happening now, either, you know, civil, criminal, however you want to take it?
100%. Absolutely. I mean, people are losing loved ones senselessly. Immigrants and United States citizens, legal citizens, are being terrorized. I mean, we are living in very unprecedented times where, I mean, it's completely absurd and unfathomable what is happening. And it's really disheartening. It's an attack on the bedrock and foundation and principles of this nation. It's an attack on citizens. It's an attack on freedom of speech. It's an attack on you know, individual rights and civil rights. And there needs to be an atoning. There needs to be an atoning and an accountability for the damage that this era is doing psychologically, physically, and emotionally to all American citizens.
And that was Awisi Bustos, candidate in the Democratic U.S. Senate primary in Illinois. If you're just joining us, it's the 21st show. We're spending today and tomorrow sharing highlights from our interviews with candidates for this year's U.S. Senate race. If you want to hear the full interviews or see some of the infographics we've put together highlighting the differences among the candidates, you can find it all at our website, 21stshow.org. Our next candidate is Democrat Jonathan Dean. He's another Chicago lawyer. His work is in civil litigation, though, and he's also a solar energy entrepreneur. And he's been an advocate for survivors of childhood sexual abuse. We spoke with him late last month. Dean has, in his words, had ICE in his own neighborhood, and that has affected how he thinks about the agency.
We've all seen or heard about the shootings, I call them murders, of Renee Good and Alex Preddy in Minneapolis. And we've all seen or heard the official government responses. And we can all use our own eyes and our own ears and our own judgment. And a lot of people, myself included, have come to the conclusion that those shootings, those killings, were absolutely unwarranted and outrageous, and that the official government response, which at times was put out minutes later on X or social media, but certainly hours later, was not thought through, and to the extent it labeled Miss Good or Mr. Preddy domestic terrorists is outrageous. And I'll say one additional thing about this is that it's my belief and assessment, both just as a citizen, but also as a lawyer, that the ICE deployment should be ruled unconstitutional. The immigration law, unconstitutional in and of itself, because, you know, the immigration laws that ICE is tasked with enforcing are either civil violations, so, you know, like kind of on the same footing as a traffic ticket, or misdemeanors. You know, 95-96% of the crimes that they're enforcing, you know, don't even rise to the level of felonies, yet they're enforcing these nonviolent crimes with violence. And I think as Americans who live in a free society, most of us can agree that law enforcement should not be enforcing nonviolent criminal violations with violence.
I also asked Dean what he sees as the path forward between focusing on the future and focusing on holding the administration accountable.
I think Democrats should do both. And, you know, luckily there's several different committees in the Senate where Democrats can focus on economic issues in one committee and, you know, including the price of butter and, you know, cost of groceries and home affordability. And then also, you know, do an independent investigation of ICE conduct and conduct by the Department of Homeland Security during these first few years of the Trump term. And I do think that there needs to be an independent investigation, not just about, you know, how ICE has operated in these cities like Chicago and Los Angeles and Minneapolis, St. Paul, but also how were they ordered to operate? Because it certainly seems to me like they're following orders. And because Republicans hold both Congress and the White House, you know, they've simply refused to issue subpoenas to the executive branch about, you know, what the orders to ICE and the Department of Homeland Security have been. But I think as part of an independent investigation, that it is my hope that, you know, regardless as to whether I win this race or not, but certainly if or when I do, I would push for this, that there is an independent investigation into all of this conduct. And I think, you know, given the disapproval ratings that we're seeing, upwards of 60-70% of Americans disapproving of ICE conduct, I think we all just need it. You know, it's a term that's used in the legal profession, sometimes it's kind of a truth and reconciliation commission. I think in the Senate, it would take the form of a Senate Select Committee to investigate the abuses by the Department of Homeland Security and ICE. But I think that's an investigation that needs to happen just so that the government can atone to the people and rebuild trust and faith in the government. But also, as you said, so, you know, there can be referrals for criminal prosecutions, which I agree with.
Continuing in domestic politics, but turning to affordability, we spent a fair amount of time talking about Dean's proposal to increase the minimum wage to $26 an hour. I asked him how he thinks about the prospect of that policy backfiring by creating more inflation.
Certainly, I think there would need to be some kind of phase up to $26 an hour to take it slowly, and so that we don't shock the economy, like you said, add additional inflation to the economy. So it would be a gradual process. There might be some small businesses who are exempt from that level, but this goes to something that I talk a lot about on the campaign trail, is that we can't just in our politics get trapped between this binary kind of argument where it's like, if we raise minimum wage, then it's going to do this and it's going to like destroy this. It's like the economy is a lot more diversified than that. It's a lot more complex than that. And Congress has the ability to investigate and study these things and collect the very best information about how to make a transition like this in a way that is the least disruptive as possible. So I with all due respect, and I do appreciate your question, Brian, but I kind of reject these political arguments where it's like, well, if you do this, then all these other bad things are going to happen, because that can be avoided if we set about raising the minimum wage the right way.
Toward the end of our time together, Jonathan Dean and I talked about foreign policy, and I asked him whether he thinks of what's happening in the Israel-Palestine conflict as a genocide.
I do, yes. And, you know, I don't understand why that's up for debate, because the experts on genocide and international law at the United Nations engaged in extensive fact-finding and legal analysis and came to that conclusion. And
I think it's up for debate because what is the consequence of that for American policy with regard to Israel? Then that's the question. If it is a genocide, what do we do about that?
Well, I think we need to stop funding Israel and engage in a process where we can rebuild trust between American taxpayers and Israel over what happened there. Because I, like many American taxpayers, are outraged that my tax dollars went to support the killing of tens of thousands of innocent people.
That was Democrat Jonathan Dean, who's running in the primary for U.S. Senate in Illinois this year. We need to take another break. When we return, we'll hear from two more candidates in this Senate primary. These are highlights from the many interviews we've done in recent months. You can find the full conversations at our website, 21stshow.org. More to come after our break. This is The 21st Show. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Throughout the hour today, we've been bringing you excerpts from our interviews with the men and women running in the primaries for U.S. Senate in Illinois this year. This is to succeed Dick Durbin, who's retiring at the end of his term. Early voting is open across Illinois. The primary itself is next week, March 17th. We've been hearing today from most of the Democratic candidates we've talked to. Tomorrow we'll hear from the rest of the Democrats, plus the five Republicans who've spoken with us. Again, these are just excerpts from longer interviews we've done. You can listen to the full versions and find more information on the candidates at our website, 21stshow.org. Continuing in alphabetical order through the Democrats, we've reached one of the frontrunners, Congresswoman Robin Kelly. Born in Harlem in New York, she went to college at Bradley University in Peoria. For a time, she directed a crisis nursery, and eventually she went into politics, working her way up from municipal government to the Illinois House of Representatives. She worked for the Illinois Treasurer for a few years and won her congressional seat in a special election in 2013. We spoke with Congresswoman Kelly early in the campaign in late August. We got a question from a listener asking what Kelly would do to ensure good health care for people across Illinois and the country. And the conversation came around to Medicare for All.
I don't mean this in a cavalier way, but whatever we decide to call it, I think there should be universal health care. Everyone should have health care. And I've always, you know, said that there's no reason in the richest country in the history of the world that everyone doesn't have quality health care. And if other countries can do it, we need to figure it out. You know, I look at things we all do better when we all do better. So we're all healthier when we're all healthier. We're all safer when we're all safer. So I'm on the Medicaid for All, but, we have to get something passed. And so if it's not exactly called that, but as long as every single person has quality health care and access to health care.
Elsewhere in that conversation, I asked Kelly about political violence and how she thinks about what the government can do about it.
It doesn't help that the person in the White House is in the White House. I think since, I'm not, like you said, stuff has gone on throughout history, but I think he made it very permissible. I think we may have made gains, but I think he's made it permissible. But also some people would say that because of what he's done, other people have felt comfortable doing what they're doing, and now you know where people really, really are. But I believe, you know, we still have a civil rights, human rights battle, and we do need to look at laws. But also, I think that individually, all of us we have to step up in our way. Also, like in my area, you know, there's a lot of things I've done. I'm a part of starting diversity dinners just for us to get to know each other from the South Suburban communities. And I actually did it three times or four times in Congress. You know, I called it Breaking Bread, where Dems and Republicans got together and we didn't even talk about politics, just getting to know each other, you know, as people. I think that's really, really important. I mean, a law is not going to change your heart. You know, I think us being exposed to each other, and we need the laws. But I don't think that's always, you know, statistics and everything always doesn't change. It's just you meeting people, having positive experiences and things like that. But, I mean, we can't stop a group from, you know, getting together. But, you know, we can keep them in check maybe, you know, as much as possible.
Now, I spoke with Kelly last year before ICE and the Border Patrol had really ramped up their operations in Chicago and Minneapolis. Nevertheless, she had quite a bit to say when we asked her about the possibility of abolishing ICE. You'll hear her mentioning the killing of Minnesota State Representative Melissa Hortman, which happened in June last year.
There's legislation that they should not be able to, you know, be untitled or wear a mask and things like that. If you think about my state colleagues that were killed in Minnesota, I believe the person had a mask on. I don't think that should be allowed. People should have to identify themselves, show some credible, you know, identity. And I don't know, you know, it might come to that we have to build it all over again. I know we have to build trust, you know, with the American people, but what's going on is devastating and horrible and destructive. And, you know, whether you're a citizen or not, because there are people that are here and are Americans, or people that are naturalized and they've been stopped also. And also, I will say that we all care about the border. We all want border security, but there's a better way to do it than we're doing it. Again, a system that needs to be reformed. Again, we need to make sure we have ambassadors and diplomats in all those countries. We, you know, haven't had that same system, you know, since Trump has been in office. And also, we need, I would say, social servicey civil servants on the border also that know how to deal with, you know, work with all kind of people. I think that's really important that, you know, everyone deserves respect. And, you know, people are running because if you speak to them, they want a better life.
Again, I spoke with Congresswoman Kelly in August. Since then, she's told Capital News Illinois that ICE should be, quote, dismantled and rebuilt from the ground up, end quote. She and I also talked about the Israel-Hamas war. Recently, she's been more willing to call Israel's actions genocide. When we spoke with her, though, she said she wasn't sure if it was her determination to make. But she did tell us there ought to be a two-state solution and that she cannot stand with Israel.
It was horrible what happened on October 7th. But as I've listened, I try to listen to everybody and stay informed. And I've heard people that study this, you know, say that it didn't just start October 7th. There's just been so much unrest. October 7th was horrible, but it didn't just start there. And that, you know, Palestinians feel like second class, you know, citizens. And but also to have peace, you know, Hamas needs to want the peace, and the Israeli government, you know, needs a peace too. But people need to be treated like human beings. And, you know, this is not helping. Again, the hostages need to be released, but also get the aid in, the medical aid, get the food in. Even, you know, like I said, Israelis are saying that and begging, you know, for that. Also, I listened to a human rights organization from Israel, and they're saying it also. And I know there's concern that, oh, Hamas is just going to take the food. Well, throw in extra, you know. If they take the food, fine, but make sure there's enough, you know, for the starving people. Because, you know, if a lot of young people die, there's not going to be, you know, people to take over and get old.
That is Democratic Congresswoman Robin Kelly, who's a candidate in the primary for U.S. Senate in Illinois this year. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're listening to highlights from some of the interviews we've done with more than a dozen Senate primary candidates. The full conversations are at our website, 21stshow.org. You'll also find infographics highlighting the differences among the candidates on major issues. Again, 21stshow.org. We have time for one more candidate today, Democrat Brian Maxwell, who's an environmental research scientist. He was raised in Charlotte, North Carolina, and came to Urbana-Champaign for postdoctoral work in 2020. He's been based there ever since. He's done some political volunteer work over the years, but this is his first time running for office. I spoke with him in late January. He told us he decided to run for Senate because of what he saw as a moral and political failure for the Democratic Party in the 2024 election. I asked him to clarify what he meant when he talked about a moral failure.
In my view, the moral failure of the Democratic Party was the fact that it, leading up to what many of us consider to be one of the most consequential elections of our lifetime, which we are living with the effects of now, the Trump administration, all the violence and chaos that's ensuing from that. In the lead up to that election, the Democratic Party chose not to listen to millions of their own voters who were literally in the streets, setting up encampments across the universities on campuses across the country, asking it, demanding that the party stop sending military support to Israel to commit a genocide in Gaza. It was incredibly unpopular, deeply immoral. We were seeing just catastrophic, unimaginable levels of violence overseas against Palestinians. You had millions of people out in the streets, you know, an entire uncommitted organized campaign, uncommitted vote in the primaries, and the leadership of the Biden-Harris administration did not budge on this issue, not one bit. And to me, I see that as a moral failure of refusing to listen to voters who are trying to go through the correct means of, you know, having their voices heard, protesting, going through the democratic process, and that was completely not heard. And I think that was a really clear missed opportunity by the Democratic Party. And the establishment is still doubling down on these policies.
I also asked Maxwell how he feels about abolishing ICE, and he came down in favor.
I think what we've allowed Immigration and Customs Enforcement to become in this country has gotten completely out of hand. We are seeing it become essentially a paramilitary police force ran by the federal government whose authority supersedes state governments. And we are seeing everyday citizens, people with documentation in this country, having their rights violated. We are seeing extrajudicial assassinations of citizens in the streets. And all this took Trump less than 6 months to do. It took Trump less than 6 months to turn this agency into one of the most well-funded paramilitary forces in the country. The annual budget now for ICE is larger than most countries' militaries around the world. And for most of its inception, the Department of Homeland Security, DHS, is less than 30 years old. For most of its inception, it has been used as a tool for racially profiling communities in this country. It was used to racially profile Muslim Americans after 9/11. It has been used to racially profile immigrant communities, and it's continuing to do that. I think that leaving that infrastructure in place for the next time someone like Trump comes along is extremely dangerous. I think we can do better than this kind of violent treatment, carceral treatment of our immigrant communities in this country.
I went on to ask him about how restrictive border enforcement should be.
Yeah, look, we have to have border enforcement for sure. But when people are coming to our borders with legitimate asylum claims, as many people do, that is a part of international law. We need to be respecting asylum claims in this country. And I think we need a holistic reform to our immigration policy that doesn't include just a pathway to citizenship for many of the people that have been in this country for decades and are contributing members of society, not just that, but a holistic overview, a holistic change to our immigration policy that includes how we approach foreign policy, how we handle these interventions and economic sanctions on other countries that are often a driver of people into this country.
During our conversation, we got a call from a listener who asked Maxwell, are elections won on the center or on the left, politically speaking? Here's how he responded.
Where do I believe that there's more promise for economic policies that actually respond to the material needs of people in this country? And I think that's some of the policies that are being put forward by people on the left. We are seeing, in my mind, the rise of Trumpism and the MAGA movement is born out of a lot of the economic insecurity of people in this country. The status quo has not been working for people in this country. For decades, we've seen the material conditions of the working class decline for the last 50, 60 years. And I don't see a lot of meaningful policy proposals come out of the center that address those material conditions. I don't think that we can improve the conditions of the working class, and I don't think we can counter the status quo and counter this populist uprising, this populism of the MAGA movement, while pushing status quo centrist economic policies. If you look at the popularity of, you know, Mayor Mamdani, the new mayor of New York, a lot of his policies were, I would consider, more left-leaning economic policies of trying to make life more affordable for people in New York City. So I support compromise where possible, but I do believe that some of the more meaningful economic policies that address the status quo in this country are coming from the left.
Once again, that was Brian Maxwell, one of the 10 men and women running in the Democratic primary for U.S. Senator from Illinois. Full interviews with Maxwell and other candidates in the Senate primaries are all available at our website, 21stshow.org. Coming up tomorrow, we'll revisit the rest of our interviews in the primary race. We have two more Democrats, and we'll hear from five of the six Republicans who've talked with us. That's all coming up tomorrow here on the 21st Show, which is produced by Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda. Some of these interviews were originally produced by Harrison Melkin. Our digital producer is Coulson Kahn. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork, and Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.